Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and start? Welcome, everyone. People are still gathering on the line. I have everybody muted at the moment, just to have less background noise. And there will be times where I'll unmute, and you can, I believe it's star one if you want to raise your hand. And so what I'm going to do right now is I'm just going to do an introduction. I'm Robin Sechko, and I'm here with Sandra Fleer. We'll introduce ourselves in a little while, and I'll just do a hand-in-hand introduction while people are still gathering. People are coming on at a fast rate here, so we want to make sure that everybody gets here and gets settled. So, again, welcome. Thanks for taking your time to join us. We really, our whole mission at Hand in Hand is support your work in parenting and give you some ideas that you can use at home with your family. This seminar is what interpersonal neurobiology is teaching us about how early memories are formed and how parenting can re-stimulate difficult early experiences in parents. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization that was founded over 30 years ago by Patty Whitfler, who had wonderful insights into the emotional needs of children based on many years of real life experience. As an organization, we work to bring parents good information, tools, and lots of support for the vital work of parenting. We know that the work of nurturing children cannot be easily done in isolation. And that's one of the things that's always drawn me to Hand in Hand is just this incredible support for parents, because all the good ideas we can't put in place without that support. As a nonprofit, we rely on donations to make many of our free resources for parents possible, including teleseminars like this, free articles on the website, free online discussion groups, and free access to an inspiring blog with many parent success stories based on this approach. Hand in Hand also offers podcasts, classes, and support groups, both in person and online, intensive trainings for parents and professionals, and consultations for one-on-one support. So you've probably already gotten yourself a little bit familiar with the Hand in Hand website, but continue to sort of peruse all the options there, and scholarships are available for all of our classes. Starting today, I just sort of want to give the overview. There's four main ideas behind the hand-in-hand approach. As parents, we need and deserve support for the emotional challenge of parenting, and we can build that support and have much more success meeting both our own needs and our children's needs. The second idea is that our children are born to feel connected with us. This sense of connection is what they need in order to learn, to build friendships, and to build resilience and confidence as they grow. When children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track, and they signal us for help. And then the final thing is when we foster laughter and play without tickling, set limits without harshness, and support children to have good hearty cries and tantrums, it helps our children feel more fully connected to us and helps them leave difficult behaviors behind. So again, Hand in Hand helps parents strengthen and rebuild the parent-child connection so we can feel successful as we love our children, and so our children can thrive on the love we have for them. So, let's see. Sandra, Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Sandra Fleer, and I've been a Hand in Hand instructor since 2012 and a consultant for about 3 or 4 years. I'm also a psychotherapist, and I've been in practice since 2005. I'm also the mother of 2 children. I have a 14-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old son. And I started using Hand in Hand tools about 10 years ago with them when they were 4 and 7. But really started using them when I did the Hand in Hand instructor training in 2010. And I so loved the approach because it was so supportive of both parents and children. And I found so helpful in my family that I felt inspired to become an instructor. And I've been teaching, since, as I said, since 2012. And I'm very happy to be here with you today.
Thanks. And I'm Robin Sechko. I live in Santa Rosa, California, in the United States. It's about an hour and a half north of San Francisco on the west coast of the U.S. I'm a marriage family therapist. We have 2 children, one who's almost 26 and one who's almost 23. In the next month, they'll both turn. So let's see. And I've been an instructor, I think, probably about 13 years. My husband and I used to run a children's summer camp, and now I work with parents doing consultations. I lead the professionals intensive course, and when I found these tools, I really felt like I had struck gold. I consider this to be the richest parenting resource that I've ever come across. And it just so profoundly enriched really all my relationships in my life, but certainly my parenting relationships and my relationship with my parents, which because these tools really are, they're relationship tools, but we're talking about it in terms of children here. And so really learning about Hand in Hand and doing the kind of work that we're going to be talking about today, listening partnerships, and is, I consider, one of the highlights of my life, really. So, great. Everyone's here. I'm just going to mention again that I have everybody on mute because with this many people, I'm guessing there's about 150 people here that there's background noise. So if Sandra's going to talk for a while, and then I'll talk for a while, and then we'll allow some time for questions at the end. And what we'll do at that point is I'll press, I think you can press *1 on your phone. Or
you said to me *2. So if *1 doesn't work,
*2. *2. Thank you. Okay. Great. So, Sandra.
Okay. Great. So today I'm going to be talking about the times when we become overwhelmed as parents by big feelings in response to our children. And those big feelings may include anger, fear, sadness, shame, helplessness, and more. And to help us understand why this happens, I'm going to talk about how our brains store memories of overwhelming experience from childhood, and how parenting can evoke those memories, and how listening partnerships can help. So this is a big topic, and we have a short time. So I'm going to focus on how parents can get help when this happens. If I can help you take away one idea from our short time together, it's that we need to do more than acknowledge stored feelings from early hurts. More than that, parents need a listener to stay with them while they describe, cry, rage, laugh, and feel the stored feelings from their early hurts. I'll say more about how to do that in a few minutes. First, let me define what overwhelming experience is. It does not have to be a big T trauma, although it may be, but it is any experience that a person has that they don't have the relational support to be able to process and shed at the time it occurs. This could include an experience with an aggressive dog, you know, everyday kinds of experiences like that, rejection from a friend, or more challenging things like tense or distracted parents, bullying, spanking, yelling, and more. When painful or frightening experiences happen, especially to a child, and the child doesn't have the support of a warm, attentive listener, those experiences are held in the brain in a different way than other memories. The brain releases a chemical to put them into storage, mostly out of awareness, but not completely. These overwhelming experiences continue to color our perceptions and emotions and can flood us at times. Those times when our minds and bodies are flooded with stored feelings from the past, brought up while parenting, are very challenging for parents to deal with. Parenting is a particularly potent evoker of early stored feelings because the demands on parents are so constant and because our children can remind us of ourselves as children as well as other people from our childhood so readily. The neural networks in our brains that hold our early experience get tugged on, and we may get flooded with stored feelings when something in the present feels similar to an early negative experience. It may feel a little bit similar, or it may feel a lot similar. And depending on the amount of stored feelings, those feelings can rush up more or less intensely and easily. Listening partnerships can really help here. Listening partnerships can provide the safety that parents need to be able to shed stored feelings. And what's necessary for that to happen? Safety needs to be built in the listening partnership relationship. Safety built out of the warmth, acceptance, and receptiveness of a calm listener. A listener who doesn't interject advice or solutions or their own stories. A listener who can remain calm and regulated while also attuned to their partner's emotional state. A listener who can help their partner to go toward and stay with the emotional part of what they are experiencing. A listener who can recognize when early hurts are stirred up by parenting. And how do you recognize when it is early experience that is stirred up? We already had a question come in to us asking about that. And the most important way you can recognize early stored emotion from a hurtful past experience is by its tendency to flare up suddenly, causing emotion far more intense in proportion to what is presently occurring. And these emotions from the past also shape perception in negative ways. It may feel like it has always been this way and always will be. It may have that kind of a flavor or tone. When stored emotions are ignited, you may also behave in ways that you don't want to with your children. You may become enraged when one of your children hits the other or hits you, for example, or your child cries heartily and you feel you cannot tolerate it, so you snap at them to stop. So what do you do when this happens? You need to find a space and hopefully a listener who can stay with the early hurt coming up. This means slowing down, connecting with it, and listening to what the experience is telling you about your early life and expressing it. A listener might suggest that the parent notice where they feel the emotion in their body and to put a hand there. Or they may ask the parent to repeat what they just said that brought up feelings. Or ask them if they would like to go closer to something that seems to be there or hovering close, a feeling that seems to be there. A listener may also ask if the feelings feel familiar to the parent from an earlier time. Slowing down and asking to be with the early experience, the child within, allows the parent to let the experience come into their awareness and for it to intensify, for that experience to really be able to come forward. And it allows, what happens in the brain is it allows the neural network that holds that experience or set of similar experiences to open and become available to be changed. And this is a very vulnerable thing for parents to do, but it's full of opportunity for healing. And if at that time a parent can receive the empathy, warmth, welcome, and understanding of their listener, this neural network can be modified. After listening, it can go back into long-term storage with elements of the new experiences of warmth and understanding added to it. This helps our brains to be more integrated and whole and helps reduce the intensity of the hurt of the original memory. As I said earlier, during this healing listening, a parent may cry, rage, sweat, laugh, shiver, or say things they needed to say at the time of the original experience. They also may simply need to stay with their experience and share it with their listener without words or by describing it. They may need to do that for a certain period of time before they can start to take in disconfirming messages, things that they needed to be able to hear at that time. Things such as, it wasn't your fault, you are worthy, you are good, you made it, matching what needs to be said to the situation. And this often leads to a parent feeling some relief. There may be a great deal of relief at this time, or a little, or it may come after the listening session. The parent may notice themselves feeling calmer and being more available to their children. They may also experience a reduction in the intensity of the feelings that typically come in their interactions with their children. They may be able to better recognize when early hurts are flooding them, especially after being listened to regularly over time. Over time, it becomes easier to sense when early hurts are flooding them and to be able to help themselves or turn for help from others. And I'm going to talk about a couple of common times for this to happen. One is when we have a child who's acting aggressively or having separation difficulties. Of course, there are many other situations, but I'll use these two examples, which are pretty powerful ones for parents often to deal with. So I've worked with many parents who have a child who is acting aggressively. And the parent tends to respond by being angry themselves or feeling scared, or both alternately. Most parents have experienced disrespect at some time when they were children, and many have experienced parents who were frightening, parents who yelled, hit, or otherwise intimidated them as children. A parent who has had these experiences will need to be able to feel what it was like for them to go through these things in order to be available for their children fully, to be with the sadness, fear, loneliness, rage and indignation they felt as children, but often didn't get to express and have understood. I have found that it is often quite challenging for parents to do this. It sounds a little easier maybe in theory than in practice. It's painful to remember these times, and it can be hard to not either attribute the cause of their feelings to their child in the present or to feel guilty for feeling as much fear or rage as they do in response to their aggressive child. They may blame themselves for having what they feel like is an overreaction, but it's simply stored feeling. But when the parent can release some of these stored feelings with the listener, it allows them to feel much more clearly in the present with their child. Separation fears are also often highly challenging to parents. I remember working with a parent whose child suddenly started experiencing separation fear when going to school. The child started feeling this at the same age as her mother had experienced the same thing as the child. This mother was able to feel what it was like for her fairly readily. She came into the consultation being able to start doing that almost right away, which isn't usual. Sometimes it takes some amount of being able to build towards that. But this particular parent came in and she was able to do that each time. And she was able to talk about and feel, like really feel what it was like for her when her own mother was harsh with her at that time. And she had a number of listening times like this. She cried about it. She was angry about it. She talked about how lonely she had felt. And she was able through this process to recognize when these feelings arose in her more clearly when it was starting to happen with her daughter. And it didn't take a lot of time before her daughter was able to start going to school more easily and regained her enjoyment of school, which she had previously enjoyed. So as you all know, there are innumerable challenges in parenting, but we can significantly reduce the stress and increase the enjoyment of it through working with these early hurts, as I said. And as parents gain experience with going through that process and seeing the good outcomes that come from it, it can make it even easier to do that. There can be lots of fears before that, that they may be overwhelmed or they might feel shamed with their listener, that kind of thing. And being able to be with those defenses is a really important step in the process of going towards early hurts. But once people are able to start going through those, going towards and staying with those, change can happen relatively rapidly, and hope and resiliency can increase. And parents can learn that they are not helpless in the face of stored feelings flooding them. And this is very important. Feelings from the past don't announce themselves as being from the past, and parents can feel just as helpless as they did when they were children, when they become flooded. So having safe listeners is an important part in healing that. And what is the result of all this listening? Remember that each time a warm listener stays with our difficult memories, the memories change. The experience of comfort, understanding, and the presence of a connected other is added to the memory. And like I said, it goes back into long-term storage in our brain changed. And this leads over time and with repetition to less reactivity and intensity when parents are under stress or when events remind them of early negative experience. And this leads to more capacity to relax, play, and be present with our children, to feel more freedom and be more loving with them. To truly support our children, we must truly support ourselves too. And parents can help each other a lot in this through the favor of listening. Robin, you want to say some more about listening partnerships?
Great.
Yeah.
I have an echo. Oh, do you? I don't hear it.
Do you still hear it?
I don't hear anything myself.
Oh, boy. I think. You don't hear an echo?
Nope.
Okay. Maybe it's gone now.
Okay.
Thanks, Sandra. So I'm going to talk a little bit about listening partnerships. And as I said earlier, to me, this is one of the most unique aspects of Hand in Hand, because many of these ideas you've heard about through Hand in Hand you'll hear about them in other places. But as we all know, when we wake up in the morning and we intend to, you know, to listen, to not react, without this kind of support, usually very quickly, we're sort of sliding down that slope again. So a listening partnership is an exchange of time, support, and listening with another person. And this can be done on the phone. It can be done over Skype. It can be done on WhatsApp, or any of the, computer programs. And it can be done in person. It's a really important thing to be able to do special time and to do stay listening and play with our children. We do have to begin building a number of listening partnerships in our lives. It's really is the tool that will allow you to follow through with all the other tools, with your good ideas, with family traditions. It's what will help you go through holidays ahead. And there's a lot of material that Hand in Hand has available to help you with that structure, but I'm going to talk about some of the things today. Because as Sandra was saying, parenting is the fastest way back mm-hmm. into our own experience as a younger person. And if we want to know how our parents dealt with us when they, when they were tired or upset or stressed, we can generally look at what we do, because it's just woven in there really deeply. And we have this parallel process. At the same time as we're raising our children, we have this process that we're going through, becoming a parent and noticing our tough spots. And both are really equally important. So finding a listening partnership, some of you probably already have listening partnerships, and I feel like I want to say here that sometimes it can be really easy and sometimes it can be more challenging to find a listening partnership. Mm-hmm. But and when I first started out, I gave the brochure to all sorts of people and I said, would you be willing to try this with me? I noticed their reactions. Some people thought, well, why don't we just talk? Or they said, well, I already have friends I talk to. And others said, oh, I just can't add this to my life. But I persisted. It took a while. So just so you know, if you're struggling with it, that's not unusual. But it's really a worthy journey. And there is, through Hand in Hand, there's a Yahoo discussion group, and people put on there that they're looking for a listening partnership. They say what time zone they're in and what their times are available. And one of the great places to do it is to take a course through Hand in Hand, in person or online, and then you've got people who already understand the process. And so that you don't have to do a whole lot of explaining. In the end, I've mostly found people through Hand in Hand. As I said, when I first learned about Hand in Hand, my children were in elementary school. And so I didn't have listening partnerships when they were young. And so I feel like I can clearly see the difference between when the children were very young and now, because things got jammed up. You know, I wasn't able to move through issues like I can now. And what I do is I make little mental notes as I go through the week. Oh, take this to my listening partner because I'm having sort of this odd reaction. And I notice, you know, what's going around in my head is something that I don't really want to say to my child. And so having sort of a tribe of listening partnerships is really what helped me go through adolescence with both my children, because the harshness that I witnessed, I'm one of five and very close in age, so you can sort of picture the sort of things that were happening, five teens in our home. And I witnessed sort of a lot of reactions that then were coming up in me. And so over time with my listening partners, my reactivity lessened. I just responded differently. And so looking back now, I can look at that sort of 6 or 7 years and almost, it's like I could almost picture this neural net that Sandra was talking about and how things changed. So keep at it, looking for a listening partner. Because there just aren't many experiences as a parent to really follow our thoughts uninterrupted. And so we can go away from certain conversations feeling isolated. And this listening time, it's not like drop off at school or talk in the parking lot or taking your child to gym class. It's a very profound process that Sandra was talking about, where we can drop into our emotions without having to make anything look better than it really does in our day-to-day life. Because we know that all families struggle, that all children struggle. So that whatever you're experiencing, your listening partner, as they can hold that, you can change your experience with it. And what you might notice in your listening partnership is what makes it safe for you. And you can even ask for that. What I noticed recently, I live in an area in the United States where there were a lot of very tragic fires. And what I've noticed since then is that I find people who really can, who don't need to dismiss anything or minimize it. Mm-hmm. And so because I have this experience, this many years now of listening, I've just needed to seek out people who have that capacity to really hear what it is I'm saying, just as I'm saying it, without having to change it in any way.
So those are the kind of people that you're going to find. And some of the things as a listener, or some of the things that might feel good for you to hear, is you can tell me every part.
Mm.
Take your time. There's no wrong way to do this. There's no wrong thing to say here. I know this part can be hard at first. I know these feelings are hard to feel. I don't need you to hurry. I am listening. This is part of a very important process of noticing and feeling how it is for you. It's okay to say whatever is on your mind. I really appreciate the effort you're making. So those are some of the things that might feel very good to hear. They're some of the things you might say to your listening partner, knowing that any of these might bring up just what Sandra was talking about, the very things physically that we do to recover from hurts that have gotten stored.
Mm-hmm.
Laughing, sweating, crying, yelling. We're so used to keeping it all together. And we want you to free up that part of your brain that's trying to manage all this hurt. So some things that you might do in your listening partnership to move things along is that you can counter bad feelings by appreciating yourself out loud.
Mm.
You are doing a good job. You can counter self-censorship by saying things that aren't nice or aren't reasonable, knowing all the while that your listening partner is remembering your goodness as a parent, is remembering that you aren't going to say these things to your child, you know, as you aren't as likely to say these things by telling your listening partner. You can counter helplessness by fighting for yourself. And you can counter fear by standing up, moving, pounding, or pushing. Because our minds can go to awful places, and we need to tell somebody, because otherwise our mind gets hijacked, and that takes up a lot of space that we need, you know, to make the meals, to clean up, to get the clothes washed, all of that, to connect with our children. So if you notice there are these thoughts that are going through your mind, if I were a good parent, I wouldn't be doing this now. Oh no, I don't know what to do. I'm really in trouble. These are the kinds of habits of thoughts that run around all of our minds. The thought of, oh, a good parent ought to be able to handle this by himself, by herself. What's wrong with me that I can't? So those are the things that we want to tell a listening partner, and anything else that comes up, even if we've had a terrible childhood and didn't get a chance to get what we needed. If once we have this relationship for 1 year, 5 years, we're going to be much better able to parent. We're going to be more steady, more dependable, likable. We're just going to increase our skills, because this healing does happen. It does change our brain. So you get in there, you work, you get those emotions out. And if this is a listening partnership that isn't quite working, it's okay to stop it and keep trying till you find different people, because, you know, children get sick, people go on vacation. You want to make sure that you're really building a support network for you. Because we know all the research shows, if there's someone who thinks the world about you, about what you're doing, who believes that you're in there, even though, you know, you're lecturing and crusty on the outside, that will make a huge difference. So your listening partner is there saying, let me carry your hope for you. Let me carry your goodness for you. So I'll stop there, and I see we have a hand up already. And
So we're going to take that question, and then what we'll do is there are some questions that people wrote in. We might get to those. If not, we want the people who are here to come first. So I'm going to unmute Rita from San Francisco. Hi, Rita.
Hi there. Hi there. Thank you for taking for doing this. Can you hear
You're
me
welcome.
Okay?
Yep.
We can.
Okay. I just had a question about finding where I know it sounds like a lot of these recommendations and feedback about what happens in the brain sounds like it comes from research. I'm just curious. I'm both a parent and a marriage and family therapist. I would love some referrals on where to go to learn more about this.
Yeah, sure. I can speak a little bit to that. So interpersonal neurobiology is a term that was coined by Daniel Siegel. So he would be somebody to look up. He has many books written on this topic, and including parenting. The person that I've been studying with for about a year and a half is Bonnie Badenoch. It's Badenoch. And she's also a family and marriage therapist on the West Coast. And what she's done has synthesized a lot of the information of relational neuroscience and written about it in a way that makes it accessible and practical for therapists to use. So I've done some training with her and some supervision, and so most of what I've been learning lately has come from her, but there's quite a number of people that you could look up. Stephen Porges is another person. But starting with those three might be a good place to start, and then you're branching off from there.
Can you spell the woman's name and the last man that you mentioned?
It's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Porges, P as in pig, O-R-G-E-S.
Okay.
He's written about the importance of safety. Safety being a therapy in the nervous system. Daniel Siegel, I think it's S-I-E-G-E-L.
Okay.
And Bonnie Badenoch. And she's written a book called Being a Brainwise Therapist. And she has a new book coming out this month called Heart of Trauma, Healing the Embodied Brain Through Relationships.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Got a quiet crowd here.
Can anyone hear me?
Okay, there's another person.
Yep. Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, awesome. So I really appreciate this call. It's really great timing. I've actually been seeing a therapist for a while now, and doing my best to work through what I experienced with, like, rage, exactly what the call is about. I grew up sexually abused and physically abused, mm-hmm. and have done a lot of work on the sexual abuse before. I decided to have kids and have, you know, uncovered a layer of rage. Awesome. I won't be sexually abusing my children, but I will be flying off the handle and inappropriately reacting, just like you guys are talking about. And so my question is, I think that, you know, there's one thing to have, like, emotional moments and yelling and this and that, but it's really not okay to hit your kids, and I'm not beating my toddler, but I do have I have rageful moments where I have hit my toddler, and I guess my question is what is, you know, the safe balance of making progress?
Yeah.
Kind of like what you guys are saying, like, it's really scary to experience the flood of emotions. It's traumatic, and I'm just. I don't ever want to get to the point where it's, you know, just not okay. I mean, it's already not okay. So
yeah.
That's what I have trouble with. Like
yeah.
you said, you know, it's important to have a listening partner where you can say everything and not change anything and
mm-hmm.
be transparent to really experience that. But my main concern is, like, in the present, ongoing, while I'm trying to heal and
yeah.
make progress for my children's safety.
Yes, I really hear you and feel so much compassion for your situation. I mean, one thing that we didn't mention, I don't know if you have I don't know if you have any listening partners right now, but one thing that can be really helpful when you're going through a lot like you are, or for anyone really with young children, is to have as many listening partners as possible, but also ones that are sort of emergency listening partners, people who are on call, that you have some safety built up with already, hopefully. You can call at a moment's notice. I've, you know, my children were young. I know I was able to turn around many evenings, sometimes with a 5-minute listening time. I don't know if you have other people in your life as well, but I think in those. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, I mean, I am honestly blessed. I don't trust myself, so I am transparent and honest with a lot of my close friends because
yeah.
I don't trust myself. And, you know, sometimes it's a check of self-criticism, harsh self-criticism. And sometimes it's I need to make sure someone knows. Like I said, I don't trust myself. I don't know. And so I can just, I guess, check in with a handful of my close friends who I've been thinking about in the course of the call.
Yeah.
To see if they'd be up for a call and just kind of be signed up for more of the protocol of a listening partner and listening and not offering, you know, their advice or kind of what you've said,
mm-hmm.
making it something it isn't. Oh, no, you're a great mom. I mean, that's nice to hear, but I guess it's kind of really moving towards the emotion connected to
yeah.
my childhood. Do you think this is something that I could also practice with my therapist, which I essentially do? I mean, the components are there, but not necessarily in a direct way of what you've outlined as a listening partner. You know, I mean, I go there and I talk about something and she'll ask a question and it moves towards,
mm-hmm.
you know, it helps me sit with the trauma. But do you think that's something that I could practice with my therapist who I see every 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think that you, it would be a really good idea for you to be able to have both of those things, a therapist on a regular basis as well as listening partners. The listening partners being for lots of different kinds of situations and emergency situations, and the therapist should be working more on that sort of deeper emotional stuff that you're working with. Yes, finding a therapist who is emotion focused is a really helpful thing. Not just talking about it, because that just doesn't do as much to help to
yeah.
use the experience.
Right. No, and a handful of times, you know, she'll be like, and what does that remind you of? Just kind of what you guys are talking about. And I've done some work there and, you know, she'll just let me cry and be like, okay, so where are we now? And what are you feeling? And so I just appreciate a lot how you guys have kind of explained it, because I connect to the hope that there's a process here. I've been going, and the past few sessions I go and I'm like, I just don't have hope that there's,
yeah.
I can kind of count on little changes, but then if I still have a moment that's really scary, it's really defeating feeling, how am I ever going to make change? But hearing you guys talk about it being over a year, or just having more listening partner time, that this is something that I can really stand up to, you said.
Yes.
And really, let's say one last thing there, that I think that the hope comes from feeling the other person with you. I think it's a sense of connection and accompaniment in our hardest places that rekindles our hope. So
hopefully you will be able to start feeling that in your therapy with the current therapist, or if you have another one. I think that's the kind of thing that you could expect to start feeling pretty soon if the therapist is with you.
Okay.
I wanted to add that in. I sort of went on pretty long there.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Let's see. A cell phone from Syracuse, New York.
Hi. Yes, that's me. My name is Kathy.
Hi there.
Hi. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Yes, I agree with the previous comment. Thank you very much for doing this. I think it brings a new perspective to what I understood Hand in Hand to be. I thought Hand in Hand was more about stay listening for children, and to hear you talk about, well, what do the parents need, really kind of in some ways opens Pandora's box, because I get some of those deep rooted emotions kind of flooding up, even just at the thought that somebody might support me. Yeah. And what you're kind of putting a name to things that I had suspected or felt happening, but I couldn't name, that some of my day-to-day interactions with my child might be triggering something that happened to me in my childhood, but I don't consciously know it or consciously remember it.
Yeah.
I've kind of buried a lot of emotions. So I guess part of my question is when you talk about this person to be a listening partner, the title, or listening partnership, you may have answered part of this in the previous question, but I was going to ask, is this meant to be a professional, as in a therapist? And you talked about it a smidge when you said something about this should be emotions focused and not just talking about it. And if you could expand on that, because I do feel that I have done a lot of therapy work, and I feel like talking doesn't resolve it. So what types of therapy are you referencing when you say find a therapist, or what other types of therapy are out there that we should be exploring beyond talk therapy?
Do you want me to answer that, Robin, or do you want to?
Sure, if you have a sense.
I think it is really about the individual therapist that you find who has the capacity to connect really well with you and you with her or him, and somebody who does relational therapy, emotion-focused therapy, therapy that's informed by interpersonal neurobiology, that kind of thing, somatic therapies, that's another area that you could explore, sensory motor, and others. And listening partners are not usually professionals. They're other parents like you. So it's a peer-to-peer listening situation. So those are two different situations that you can get listening in.
And one thing I'll put in here is that you can sign up through Hand in Hand for consultations.
Oh,
and
yes,
that will be somebody who's an instructor who's trained in listening. And you can sign up for 1 hour, 3 hours, however you want, because both Sandra and I work with people over the phone anywhere in the world on a regular basis, so you can call and work with us. Some of us are also therapists. Most of us aren't. But all of the instructors are very highly trained listeners and understand this process. And I've found, I'm a therapist, but I've found that there's only a small percentage of therapists who really understand the emotional, process that goes into healing. It seems odd, but there's a place for therapy, and there's a place for really listening partners and for getting a quantity of time with people who understand how the body recovers from upset or from trauma. And as Sandra said, we're not just talking about, you know, huge trauma. Little things happen on a daily basis and happened in our childhood that have left a residue. And so, you know, we can talk and talk and talk, but until we can sometimes laugh or stomp or cry or sweat, that upset isn't going to leave the body in the same way and help our mind sort of recover and think better. So you can look, I would suggest even all of them, do consultations with, both of us are available for consultations through Hand in Hand. You work with a therapist who's someone who you feel like, okay, this person gets it, and start building your listening partnerships. Just a thought.
Okay.
I do all three.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I think you touched on something there, kind of like a second part to the question, which was, is there a physical recovery? Like, and I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, that there's more to it than talking. Because one of the things I even struggle with is I don't know how I feel. I guess my symptom or habit or whatever was to stuff feelings. I don't name them.
Mm-hmm.
And but when people say, well, how did that make you feel when XYZ happened to you? I have no words. I don't know how it made me feel. I just know that I get really weepy and struggle keeping my demeanor calm. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And you're kind of saying,
and
I don't know how I would talk it through. Because if I can't name the feeling, is the other person going to be hearing anything other than a synopsis of what happened? This person said that, I said this.
Yeah.
You know, is a synopsis really healing? I'm starting to discover I don't think that it is.
Right. So you, and so we're just right there with you as you feel weepy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's exactly where you are. And that's where your healing is. And just that's accessible to you is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And we just right there. You don't have to have words. It can be quiet, you know. And we do recover. You know, upset leaves the body physically. Children are the best way to notice that, because they know just how to recover. They know exactly what their recovery system is. And we're getting ourselves ready to understand that and to listen when they tantrum and when they cry and when they sweat. That's how upset leaves the body. And so, and you know too, it's, we just get to trust you. No words is fine.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll just follow that process
for
with
just
you.
Just a second.
That, well, children do the same thing. They know their recovery process. You know, experiences that they've had have left a residue all the way back to birth, you know, and so something triggers for them. You know, it may be something in the moment. It may be something that reminds them from long ago. And so then they signal us. Their behavior goes off track, or they launch an emotional response. And there they are, ready to recover. And so we play with that. We listen to it. We set a limit. We move in close. And they do the same recovery process. They laugh inappropriately, or they laugh loud, you know, they tantrum, they cry, and that's how they recover. So we listen through that. That's actually the mechanism of healing. All of that leaving the body is the process of recovery. It has a huge purpose, and they know that. We just have to get ourselves ready for it and build our tolerance for it. And then recover from having listened for an hour and a half to a sweating, foaming at the mouth, raging child, you know.
Okay, so it does take a long period.
Yeah.
I feel like my child rejects my attempt at being there.
Yeah,
nearby, you know, shut the door.
Yeah.
She's a little older. She's not
a
toddler. I feel like a lot of times the advice for a toddler just doesn't apply anymore, and I don't know what it is. Is it really an hour and a half? Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It can, and so that's, and I'll just say that Hand in Hand, the material is aimed for sort of birth to six, because as a nonprofit, we've really needed to focus on certain age, but these tools apply to every child, any age they are, all the way into 20s, lifetime. But so that might be a case where you'd want to work with a consultant to sort of make a plan and figure out how to work with the age of your child. Because you do have to tweak the tools a little bit as children get older. And so, yeah. So thanks for your question. Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm. And we're going to move on now because the questions are building up here. But, yeah, reach out for help, however it is, listening partnership consultant, because you're on a good track here.
Yeah, and don't stop until you get it.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. So let's see. San Diego. We have someone from San Diego.
Hello?
Here.
Yes. Yes, it's me. Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Yes.
I have been following Hand in Hand method for a little while now, and it's great. sorry, but I still struggle. Sometimes. I have a very challenging 5-year-old boy who can be very aggressive, and sometimes, you know, he will purposely do things to really push your buttons. When he doesn't get his way, he will hurt his sister, or he will throw things over to the neighbor's house. Anything. He even looks at you to show you, I'm about to do this if you don't, you know. These things actually don't bother me, and I know how Hand in Hand is telling me to approach the situation. My struggle comes when I'm overwhelmed on days when I'm sleep deprived most days because I have another 2-year-old, and my kids don't really sleep very well these days. They're both scared. They come to our bedroom. Anyway, my biggest challenge is when I have to deal with my husband, who is he stresses us so much. And I try to be present. I try to be mindful. And I most days do good. I manage to not yell. But then, you know, it bubbles up, and eventually I do yell. And I sort of terrorize my kids, you know, when I do that. And I know that in that moment, I know that this is not the appropriate way. I know that this is not how I would usually do it if I was calm. But it is very hard for me to stay mindful and centered when there's a lot of outside stressors. So, for example, last week my sister-in-law was visiting, and she's a very toxic person. She's very critical. She makes really awful remarks, you know. And I managed to just sort of, like, let it just bounce off of me. My son one day was having a really hard time. He wanted another color of balloon that his sister had, and I stayed with him as he was tantruming about it, and he scratched my face so hard. I was not able to escape that. He scratched it from top of my brow down to my chin, and I had a big scratch mark. I was so proud of myself that I was able to, like, not react and all that stuff. And as I'm walking, you know, later on, I said to my husband, I have to go out for a little quick walk with my daughter to sort of calm down. I was walking by my husband, and I hear my husband telling my son, you know, I'm not going to let you cry like you do for mom. You know, I'm not going to let you cry all you want. And so I let that bounce off of me. But when my husband continues and he does other things to stress us out and yells at me, I feel like I cannot be the mother I want to be for my kid. It's like, not only do I have to manage my own emotions and my kid's emotions, but I also have to manage my husband's emotions. And when all of these come together on a day that really, you know, I've been really tired and sleep deprived, I lose it. So I want to know, I've tried listening partnership. It hasn't worked that much. I think I have to talk to a therapist. I know I have marriage issues. How do I protect me and my child and my children from, you know, things from the outside, like my husband, who, you know, over every little thing yells at all of us, so that I can basically control myself so I don't yell at my kids. You know what I mean? It's like I'm transmitting the hurt that I feel from my husband on my kids. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
What can I do to be present at that moment?
That's a big question.
You want me to?
Yeah, go ahead, Robin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those are our, not our favorite, you know, not our best parenting moments. You're describing it really well, you know.
Yeah.
We haven't had enough sleep. We're overwhelmed. Things build up. We have, you know, a relative in our home, and boom, out it comes. And, you know, the best thing I can say there is what we've been talking about is those moments are going to happen. And in those moments, what my experience has been is if I am regularly getting support, and whatever that looks like for you, and I'm working on a regular basis every week, either in a group, maybe with listening partners, maybe with a therapist. So I'm keeping on top of it regularly. And then I have mm-hmm. a place when I feel it broiling up inside of me in the moment, I can text somebody who's not going to worry about me and say, uh-oh, I'm at 100,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I mean, I'm not going to go into now what to do in the moment when your son is aggressive or when your husband's doing it. That would be sort of another call and a consult. But for you, what we want to do on a regular basis is be draining out. Somebody needs to hear how overwhelmed you feel and how sleep deprived you are, and how hard you're working to love your kids well. Someone, you know, wants to hear that on a regular basis. So regularly you're sort of draining the oppressiveness that all of us feel as parents. And it's important we honor that. We really do. It is not easy.
Yeah.
So, and then you get to talk about how hard it is. And then you have a place to go in the moment. So it's, when you say I've tried listening partnerships, sort of, it sounds like they haven't worked. Well, you know, maybe you can work with somebody to get somebody who works better for that. And until that, you can do consultations, which are one way where you can be saying, yeah.
So there is.
Go ahead.
So I'm thinking about calling. In actually, not calling in. Go visit a therapist in my area who. She's a family therapist, and she knows Hand in Hand. She's taken a course. That's how I found out about her. And luckily, I'm in the same area as Patty. So, mm-hmm. So you know, there are more
Great.
People around here who practice this. But
yeah.
one of the fears I have is, like, my husband is extremely controlling. And when it comes to spending money, you know, he's very, like, controlling as to how we spend money. But I've come to a point that I don't care if he's going to get upset. On myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, my husband is
yeah.
so interesting. If I went and spent $300 on a pair of shoes, he wouldn't complain.
Yeah.
But if I want to spend on money I choose to spend on certain things, I've always feared that he's gonna say no, or this is stupid,
mm-hmm.
or we can't afford this thing and that thing. You know, because just getting a babysitter. For the longest time,
mm-hmm.
when I needed
yeah.
it the most, when my kids were very little, he was against that. He would try to, like, you know, not have me spend the money, but then yet he wouldn't help. I had to really fight for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I've
yeah.
come to a point where
mm-hmm.
I just don't care what he thinks anymore, and I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm. Okay.
But
okay.
I,
and you can I, tell your... Your therapist, or you can tell, you can work on that place where, you know, you get powerless and you say, look, this is important. I want it for me. And in your
okay.
listening partnership with your therapist, in your consult, you get to say, I'm going to fight for this. This matters. This is my health. This is my family's health. I'm going to do this, you know,
yeah,
and it might be easier
strong,
to do it with someone else first. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
where you get to find that
okay.
that powerful girl inside, you know, that got probably got squashed long ago, and is going to say, nope, this matters to me. So you practice it somewhere else again and again, so that you don't have to threaten when you do it. But yeah, so I'm sorry
okay,
we have
yeah.
to move on, but. Thank you
okay.
for speaking up, and you,
thank you
keep going for what you want. You're worth it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for your question.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, Sandra, we have to think about what to do here. It's the hour. And
I know. I feel like we could just keep on going here.
We have four more questions. So do you want to – are you booked up or do you want to go?
I don't
okay.
know.
So we've got Portland, Oregon. I think I just muted you, or maybe you just left Portland, Oregon. I just unmuted you, and then you disappeared. Portland, Oregon, no? Okay. No. Campbell, California, ICF International. Oh, wait. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I clicked the wrong. Sorry.
Did you drop?
Here, I'm going to look. I didn't drop them. I'm going to now go down and unmute. ICF International, Campbell, California.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. Sorry, yeah, old work this phone is... that doesn't always show my name.
Oh, okay. Hi, my name's... Okay. All right.
Yeah. My name is Karen, and I just so appreciate the call, but also I'm so touched and moved by the women who've spoken, and I just wanted to share some hope, because you know I can relate to each and every one of what you've said, and mm-hmm. I have found listening partnerships to be so incredibly powerful in my own healing and parenting journey, and I found them to be so much more powerful than individual or even group therapy for traumatic mm-hmm. issues in my own life. So I guess my only encouragement, and I love that you added, since I raised my hand, about having a consult, but I would really suggest taking a class from Hand in Hand or reaching out to a consultant who's trained yeah. in listening as yeah. your first experience mm-hmm. with a listening
yeah.
partner. I've done listening partnerships with a variety of people who've come into them without having that training background.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been as fruitful for either one of us. So I would just really highly recommend that you reach out to an instructor who, or get a consult with somebody, so that you can actually have the experience of being listened to by somebody who has some training and some background, because that will show you how valuable and amazing the whole process is. And then, you know, encourage you to sign up for a listening partner. I myself am actually looking for a listening partnership, and I forget about the Yahoo group. I think
How did you find your listening partners in the beginning? How did you find ones that worked so well with you? Maybe the people listening in.
Well, I should say, so I took Patty's class when my child was two.
Okay.
And then my husband and I took it, and then I took the parent instructor course.
Okay.
During training course. And so that's where I had another instructor, and we had a lovely listening partnership for about 4 years. But over the years, I've fallen off the wagon, and that my stress level, my reaction, all of it, my anger, my triggers, they're all back because I haven't maintained that listening partnership. And I just reiterate again how important it is to have the person that you can regularly offload to. But then I also had, like you said, a cadre of people who I could just, you know, ping, text real quick and say, do you have 10 minutes? I just got to offload mm-hmm. right now before I, you know, break down or freak out on my child. So I just feel so much for all the women who've shared. And I think mm-hmm. from all the women who've shared, you can hear how powerful it is
to be listened to
when somebody has that opportunity to offload and vent, and how validating it is that we all have these struggles.
Yeah.
And this is such a powerful tool. I can't say enough about it. And it really will help you in so many ways if you find, you know, a good connection with somebody. So keep mm-hmm. on it.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Karen. Yeah. That's really, it's sort of good advice, is to maybe start with a group or a consult with an instructor, so that you can feel what it feels like to get really good listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
Thank you, Karen.
We haven't already mentioned it. There's a self-directed listening partnership course to help you learn some of the skills. I mean, they aren't skills that necessarily you necessarily know how to use right away. They are a set of skills that build up over time.
Thanks.
Okay.
So Portland, Oregon. I got. Thank you for raising your hand again. You're unmuted.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. We can hear you, Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay. Hi there. My question is kind of similar to the lady who shared about her husband. It's just about like outside relationship, aside from parent and child. You know, I'm still dealing with parents who are kind of, you know, as an adult, who are still kind of stuck in that toxic way of being. And although, but particularly with my mom, I don't have a relationship with my dad because he's just not willing, you know, to work on that with me. And I know I need to actually go back to therapy and kind of work through those things. And I've known that for a while. And I, you know, hearing this is kind of encouraging me more to do so. But with my mom, her and I are, you know, we've done a lot of work, but we're still not there. And so some of those ways of being come out when she comes to visit, and so I'm just wondering, you know, how we can overcome that or how we can deal with that, particularly with like the lack of listening, the minimizing of things that, you know, we try to talk about, you know, just kind of blowing them over, or, you know, how can we, I feel like I'm stuck in two worlds. I feel like I'm stuck, you know, because I'm really wanting things to be different with my daughter, and I'm really trying very hard. But like you were talking about in the beginning, you know, these things come up as parents, and it happens on a daily basis, and it's really, really, really hard for me. And then I go back, and I'm trying to do this work as an adult, but then I go back, and I have these interactions, you know, with a parent myself, and you know, I just feel stuck. I feel like, wow, it's never, you know, going to get different. And her and I are at the point that we're going to, you know, I kind of told her I'm not really willing to kind of keep the relationship going unless we're going to work on this together and go see some professional help, because we keep kind of going round and round about in circles and nothing is really changing. These big overarching themes still continue to exist. And I don't want that. I tell her how it hurts me and how it brings these things up for me, and it makes it really, really hard for me to do it different with my daughter. And I have another one on the way, a little boy on the way, and you know, and so she agrees and she understands that, but it's definitely a blind spot and it's definitely a challenge. And we are, you know, going to be kind of working on this together and trying to go to therapy, which I'm really thankful for, because I don't have that desire or willingness on my dad's side. So yeah, I just feel like I'm stuck in two worlds, and I just want to get out of it. I'm just tired. My soul is literally tired of this. So I just wanted to hear anything that you guys had to say, because I would love to have, you know, like my husband, he, you know, doesn't have all these past hurts and whatnot. So he listens and, you know, he just doesn't have a lot of personal experience to really be as, I mean, he's compassionate and he's sympathetic, but as far as empathy goes, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have personal experience to really kind of create that empathy. And so it only goes so far, but he's a really great listener and I really appreciate everything he does to try to help me. But I definitely need someone who's more skilled, you know, in those ways of being, in ways, it's like a formula on how to traverse it, you know. But I would really, I would really love for, you know, that to take place between my mom and me, too. So, and I know that I don't need it to be that way for there to be healing, but that's just kind of like my idealistic hopefulness of how I'd like my life to look like. But, so I don't know, just any insight you all have on how to deal with parents who are still, you know, doing what they're doing?
One thing that, Robin, I don't know if you have something to say. I have one thing that I would, that comes to my mind, and that's that, you know, there's the adult relationship happening between the two of you and the patterns that are there now. And there are also the younger parts, the earlier memories that you have with your mom, that it would be, I think, essential for you to have some space, whether it's a listening partnership, consultation, a therapist, whatever it is, where you can go towards those younger experiences as well. It may be that that's a part of the ongoing feeling of stuckness or cyclicalness about it, or the sense that you can't get out of something. Could be that there's something from a younger time or many younger times that doesn't, that those parts haven't felt heard yet or felt through. That's, you know, what we've been talking about in the talk today, is that those younger parts don't go, or those younger experiences don't go away. They just kind of remain frozen in the system. And I think that they have a far greater influence over our feelings and our sense of what is possible, our perspective on how the world works and what our expectations can be in relationships and so on, than we would normally think. So that, I guess that's what comes to my mind when I think about an area that you could explore some more. Robin, do you have anything to add?
What I was thinking I might do is we had a question that was a little bit similar to this, and I was thinking, and so I just made some notes, and this might help. I thought what I would do that is bring in this question that somebody asked us ahead of the call, who couldn't be on today, but who's going to listen to this. And, her thing, she said, I'm reflecting a lot about my childhood. I'm wondering how I can focus and work on a positive relationship with my mom at this point, rather than feel tense and frustrated when I observe her interactions with my children and the general tension that comes with having a lot of unspoken issues that likely won't be resolved. Mm-hmm. I should say my mom is and was a wonderful mother. She did the best she could, was incredibly involved, and did nothing glaringly horrible. But I still deal with issues of perfectionism, shame, like I'm not good enough, and a lack of truly wanting to see me for who I am. I want to work towards accepting my mom for who she is, appreciating what she does do that's helpful, and leaving the rest so I can have a more positive relationship with her as she gets older. I do a lot of listening time around this stuff, but it doesn't seem to translate to letting it go. I still get incredibly frustrated and angry feeling. So some of that may be what you're experiencing, but and hopefully some of this will help. Is this, as Sandra was saying, it's probably a bigger emotional project than any of us imagine at first. Because this is, you know, one of our primary relationships, one that we'll work on for many years. And so when we're still feeling angry and frustrated and stuck, then these can be some things that might stir things up. Remembering that your mom did her very best, she wants the best for you as a parent, and there are places that may not be resolved, but you can work on away from her. So one direction to keep in mind is to go back in your listening time or in your consult, talk to the little girl whose mom didn't understand her and didn't know how to help her. Tell her, I'm sorry your mom didn't understand how it was for you. And your mom may never be able to do that, but I'm going to stay with you while you face that. So you're really sort of talking to the little you, the 4-year-old, the 6-year-old. And then in that, you're sort of facing the fact that you may never get the understanding, that it won't be resolved, but the person there will help you grieve that and face the fact that you didn't get from her what a little girl needs, and that there's something that needs to be grieved there. Another direction might be to really fight for yourself. And in your listening partnership with your your consultant, blast your mom unedited, and remembering that a good listening partner will hold the other side at the same time, that you do love your mom deeply and you'd never want to hurt her, but you need to fight for yourself and let the anger show. Be fully upset about what happened, what's still happening, and that there wasn't someone to help, and speak those resentments that you hold about, you know, the shame or the loss, not being good enough. Be upset that this was so subtle that no one saw it.
nobody came in and understood and say every last thing you need to say to your mom about the resentments that you hold. So you're fighting for your goodness just as you are and just as you were. And then tell her what you want to see about her. So this is something that can help move things out in, you know, a setting away from your mom. Things that are probably going around in our heads anyway. And then when you're going about your daily life, so another direction is when you don't have a listener, really support yourself. So kind of corralling your mind to control where it goes when there's no listener. Look how well I survived this. Look at what a good life I've made in spite of this loss in my childhood. I have a good life even though I didn't get what I needed. And again, as I was saying earlier, make a note where your mind wants to go when you don't have a listener so that you can really pull your attention right to it in your listening time. And when you're not having a listener, try hard to pull your attention away from that to where your life is good so that the resentments aren't sort of rolling around in you when there is no listener there. So, and then when you have a listener, you can go straight for any aspect that you're working on, but you're able to feel the goodness of your life and the fact that you made it, you know, even with these places that are stuck. So, and if you feel helpless,
I really appreciate all of that.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah. And if there's a place where you feel helpless or not good enough, sort of, you know, wherever you've let your life go now, get powerful physically. Build your strength. You know, if there's a way that not being able to get your mom or your dad to understand traps you in some way, tackle that in your listening partner. Stand up, stomp, you know, tackle whatever you gave up for, you know, making things, you know, making things look like they were okay when they weren't. And go back and reclaim that, knowing this won't go away tomorrow, but your life will get better. And just as Karen was saying, every time you look, feelings are going to be there, but they're going to affect you less and less. Your perspective will get better. You'll think, you know, it's like, yes, this isn't perfect, but I'm working on it. Offloaded tons of feelings every time you look, those feelings are going to be there, but you're going to manage them better and better because of someone thinking about your goodness while you're telling them all the things that didn't work for you. You know, this is what happened to you, but your relationship to it is going to shift. And then one more thought here, and this is a lot, I know, but one direction to think of with your mom is to give your mom special time and do whatever your mom wants, just the way your mom wants it, and delight in this in order to work towards the relationship you want. And if the thought of this is, you know, is too much, then take those feelings to your consultant, to your listening partner. Work on the feelings that get in the way, because this is a way to push those feelings, you know, toward what needs to be tackled. And if what's coming up is, you know, look at what you didn't give me. Why should I do anything for you? Take that to your listening partner and maybe see if you can clear it out to give your mom special time. Knowing that, you know, in essence, she's always going to be your mom and those feelings aren't going to go away, but your relationship to them will. So that's a lot of information, but I wanted to answer that other question too. So, anything?
I really appreciate
Portland?
It. It's awesome. And,
great.
It's so helpful. And I feel hopeful, you know. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
You're so welcome. Yeah. Thanks for reaching out for support. Wise. Mm-hmm.
Should we maybe just take one more call, Robin, or one more question?
Okay. San Francisco, Christine O'Brien.
Hi. Can
Hi.
You hear me? Hi.
Yo,
thank you guys so
hi,
much.
Christine.
This was really helpful. I think I've, like, over the time, have an answer, but in the beginning when I think, Sandra, you were saying, like, when our trauma that we experienced as kids and kind of triggers us to react in a way that we don't want to with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, where's the recovery for our kids in those months so that they're not passing it on? But then I'm like, oh, right, it's the listening, it's the stay listening with the kids, it's the listening partnerships, it's all five of the strategies that, and then just listening to everyone, like everyone's making these mistakes with their kids and it's a universal. So I just think like, I like the idea of like talking about the hope and the recovery.
You like talking about that because it feels like so much or what?
It's just like, oh, right, there's the repair after the mistake.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. I hear a lot of feeling in there.
Yeah, I didn't mean to start crying. But
it's okay. that's exactly true.
There.
Yeah, there's all those tools to support the kids. And like Robin was saying earlier, though, that the part about us getting listened to, honestly, over the years that I've been teaching and getting this help myself, I find that that is the core part, I think, for most parents is being listened to themselves in order to be able to listen to their kids. And it's almost magical in a way, or just how it's just very powerful how much we're able to offer them when we're able to get it ourselves. So yes, you can offer that to your kids, and your kids are going to give you so many opportunities to be able to connect and repair again.
Right, like Patty says, the bus will come around again.
Oh, they certainly
will. Like if we miss it the first time, it's coming back.
It is. Right, full of gas and oomph.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Yeah. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So there are two more questions, but we need to end here. So there's a Massachusetts and Petaluma. All I can say is that I hope maybe you'll find a way to get a hold of Sandra or me or sign up for a consult. Whatever's been touched in you is important. We do want to hear it, but we need to end this here. And so I'm sorry we can't get to you. And I just really want to appreciate everyone's presence here, hanging in for a very long teleseminar when I know there's 100 things pulling at your attention. Again, just remember there are articles, there's podcasts, the discussion group, Facebook support groups, consultations with Sandra or me or other experienced instructors. There are self-guided courses that Hand in Hand offers. And also, as a few people have mentioned, I do think if there's a way that you can get yourself to a starter class or to a parent intensive or a professional's intensive, that will really move things forward. And you will meet people in those groups that are options for listening partnerships. So, and then there's the book Listen. So thank you for being here. Sandra, I'll let you say goodbye here.
Yeah, I just want to say the same thing. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be with you all here today. I hear just the amount of caring on part of everybody here. And again, it's been a pleasure, and take care.
Thanks. Yeah, so thank you for being here. And stay in touch. Keep reaching out for the support that you deserve and can well use. So goodbye, everyone.
Bye now.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.